quite a few questions here, which is nice. Let's see what happens. Devante, can you briefly explain the difference between samadhi, samatha, and jhana? Thank you. Okay, samadhi, samatha, and jhana, these are all very related ideas in Buddhism. And what the difference is that some of these terms are more broader and some of the terms are more narrow in the definition. So samatha is the most broadest of these terms. Samatha just means calm, right? So samatha is very relative. If you have a little bit of more calm, it means you have a little bit of more samatha than you had before. But it doesn't mean that you have any particularly deep state or anything like that. It just means you feel more, it's a relative thing. More calm than you were before, you have a bit more samatha. And as you progress through becoming more and more calm, there comes a point when that samatha becomes samadhi. And samadhi really means that you are, if you like, one with the object, not distracted from the object that you are looking at. That is what really samadhi is. And samadhi can be very basic, can be the basic, just watching the breath. And when you are with the breath 100%, not really moving anywhere, but in a relaxed way, right? You're not tense, you're not using any force on the object of the meditation, but very relaxed about it. But you're fully with that. You can call that already, if you like, a certain degree of samadhi. Samadhi already, because you're with one thing, not allowing yourself to be distracted. In fact, one of the definitions of samadhi is precisely the idea of non-distraction, not moving anywhere with your mind. Now, the jhanas, they are very specific states of the samadhi. These are like, kind of, it's almost like these are things that you almost enter into. And once you enter into them, you stay there for a certain period of time. And then when the momentum and the power, if you like, of that samadhi comes to an end, then you come out of the jhana again. So these are more like specific states, right? Specific depths of samadhi practice. Usually when the suttas use the word samadhi, it usually refers to the jhanas. Usually it's the same thing here. But samadhi is a little bit more broad and it means the general idea of not being distracted. So samatha is the most broad, samadhi second broad, and jhana, very specific states of samadhi that you gain. Okay. So I hope that helps. If it doesn't help, again, please come back later on. Okay, dear Ajahn, need some advice on pest control in unavoidable situations where you have done your best to maintain hygiene, but there are still ants or bugs destroying plants in the garden. Thank you. Okay. Yes. This is a common problem, that the insects are not doing what they're told to do. They're supposed to stay away. And this is quite a common problem, especially in gardens and that sort of thing, that you have things destroying these things. And ideally, what you do is that you don't worry too much if a few plants get destroyed. You try to find plants that don't get destroyed by insects, right? Instead of actually killing the insects, because if you start killing the insects, you are involved in an endless war that is unwinnable. And all you're going to do is keep on killing insects until the end of samsara. And and if you keep on killing insects, you are always postponing samsara. So it is endless. There is no end to that particular one. So ideally, you try to find a way out of that. Try to avoid doing this if at all possible. Find different plants. Do something else. I don't think the answer really is to kill insects in that situation. Sometimes we are forced to kill insects. Sometimes there may be some pest control or government agency that says if you don't kill the white ants, the termites or whatever, then you are liable for a fine because you're endangering the neighborhood. I don't know what. in certain situations, it's almost impossible to avoid having to kill. And in those situations, you do it reluctantly because you don't have much choice. And because you don't have much choice, there isn't really much bad karma involved because you don't have any anger about those insects. It's just that things are conspiring against you in such a difficult way that it's actually very hard to avoid. Or it can be like you work in the kitchen, right, and you are a chef or something like that, and the pest control says you have to do something with the cockroaches because they are a threat to public hygiene. So again, you can see in some of those situations you don't have much choice because otherwise you're endangering the health of people, right? It's almost like you can't really win in that kind of situation. Either you endanger the people or you the cockroaches. You have a choice there between people and cockroaches. And then you choose the people, of course. So that is that kind of situation. So try your very, very best to avoid these things. I would not recommend to do this, if at all possible, to avoid it. Okay, dear Ajahn, is intentionally omission of facts considered lying and bad? Or not acknowledging what is not the truth as equally bad. So omission of fact, is it considered lying or bad? In a sense, it is not being truthful, right? Remember what we were saying before, is that you're trying to be honest, you're trying to be trustworthy and these kind of things. And if you omit facts when you are expected to give the facts, that is a similar situation. It is perhaps not as far bad as outrightly lying, because if you're outrightly lying, it means that you are specifically distorting reality. You can argue if you're omitting facts, you're not actually distorting anything, you're just omitting something. But it's a similar kind of thing. You're not really reliable and trustworthy in the same way. If you are expected to state facts, right, like they say in court, we want to hear the full truth, right, so everything. So if you are, it is a similar kind of problem. Not acknowledging what is not true, is that equally bad? And again, yes, it is a similar kind of thing, because you are distorting a little bit what is going on. You're not being entirely trustworthy here. So the idea is to be as trustworthy and reliable as you can, right? Second question. One person has a lot of wealth but is not generous. Neither is he a bad person, he does no harm to anyone. Another person also has a lot of wealth, but does a lot of charity. However, he has harsh speech with everyone he meets. What kind of karma would these two have, and who is a better person? Okay, so first of all, you can never really compare people. You can never say that one person is better than anyone else. These things are impossible. Remember that the Buddha said that this whole thing about I am superior, I am inferior, I am equal, all of that is just delusion. Comparison is impossible. And the reason why comparison is impossible is because we are always changing. We're always becoming something different, right? One moment you are better, the next moment you are worse. One moment you are angry, the other person is nice, the other moment is the reversal of roles. So who is better? You can say, okay, average out. But even if you average out, some people are becoming more kind. Some people are becoming more nasty. So at what particular point are you better? At what particular point are you worse? In a past life, you were an animal. In a past life, this other person was a deva. Then roles are changing. So there is no inherent aspect inside of us that can be compared to somebody else. All of that is part of the atta delusion, the self delusion, that we are something permanent that actually is comparable with other people. But there is nothing really there in the end that is comparable. So you can never really say anything like this. You can't compare these kind of people. So all you can say is that the person who is not generous, well, then he is missing out on that good karma, right? But he is not making the bad karma of having harsh speech. The other one who is generous, he is making good karma from charity, but he's making some bad karma from harsh speech. how this kind of how this turns out when they die, who is kind of going to have the better rebirth as a consequence of this, depends on an enormous number of factors. It depends on karma from the past lives. It depends on the kind of mind state they have developed in this life. It may very well be that they have quite different mind states in general. Somebody with harsh speech, it may be that the mind state of that person is more harsh, right? More negative. And that, of course, if that is the case, it will lead to bad consequence. Sometimes the harsh speech can just be a matter of bad habit. Maybe there isn't really anything going on inside. Maybe they have just used to being in a boss position and kind of bossing people around a little bit, right? So they may seem a bit harsh, but maybe they're not so harsh on the inside. So very, very hard to see unless you can read their minds. So this is what I would recommend you to do. Get into deep samadhi and then read the mind, right? And then you can come back and you can tell me and you can let me know what is going on. And you can kind of look into the future and see what happens. Okay, there you are. Dear Bhante, refer to Anguttara 357, page 13, is that right? What are the five? I didn't read out those five factors in the last paragraph. That's right, I remember now. That was I forgot about that. Too many things going on in these suttas. I can only do so many things. Which sutta is it again? Does anybody remember which page it is? 357, okay. Which number? Which page? 23, okay. Okay, yeah, there we are. Vacha, okay, that's right, yeah. Okay, so this is like a hierarchy of where you get the most merit. That's what this is all about. So you start off, it doesn't mean that you choose only the highest merit. You do merit across the board, but it gives you a hierarchy. So if you give the dishwashing water to little insects, that's already merit. If you want more merit, much more merit, you give to human beings. If you want even more merit, you give to human beings who are virtuous. If you want to make the highest kind of merit, you give to these people who have five factors and abandon five. What are these five factors they have abandoned? What do you think? Any ideas? Five hindrances, right? They have abandoned the five hindrances for good. They are completely destroyed in this particular person. The five factors they possess are the five factors of the arahant. That is what they possess. And what are those five factors? I think they are the aseka means the one who is no longer in training, the aseka factor of virtue, of samadhi, of panya, of liberation, and knowledge and vision of liberation. Thank you. Knowledge and liberation. So these are the five factors of the aseka, the one beyond training, which is the arahant, right? They have perfected these things to the highest possible thing here. Yeah? Okay, so I hope that is okay, so we're talking about the arahant there, that's why there is extra merit in this particular case. Dear Ajahn, is there a portal in the internet that we can find suttas according to the subject matter? For e.g. for gratitude, what are the relevant suttas to read for mindfulness, and what are all the relevant suttas? Or mindfulness, what are all the relevant suttas? Thank you. Well, then what you can do, what I recommend you to do, is to go to a place like Sutta Central. And what you can do there, you can search the suttas. So you just type in gratitude, right? And then you see which suttas come up with gratitude. This is a very nice way of doing that. You get all the reference to gratitude in all the suttas straight away. You press the button, the sutta comes up, and you can read the sutta right there. This is the nice thing about these modern search engines and things. You can actually search things very, very simply in that way. The same thing with mindfulness, but I'm afraid that if you type in mindfulness in a search, we just have too many suttas, like 500 suttas, right? Ooh, it can take you a long time to read all of that. So maybe you can kind of type in mindfulness and something else, so you kind of narrow it down a little bit more. That is a good way of doing that. Another way of doing this is if you have access to the translations by Bhikkhu Bodhi, they have very good indices at the back, and it will have index saying gratitude, index saying mindfulness, and that sort of thing here. And you can look it up, and then you can read for yourself directly from Bhikkhu Bodhi's translations. They are very nice translations at the same time. And then also you have a bit of notes and a bit of explanation and that sort of thing, which makes it easy to understand what is going on. So that is a good way of doing that. And otherwise you can go to someone who is familiar with the suttas and ask them if they have any good suggestions for you as well. That's another way of doing it. Okay. Dear Ajahn, can you tell the story of the dog duty ascetic as in Majjhima Nikaya 57? What did or how did this dog duty ascetic lead his life? I think I pretty much said that already. It was kind of, it was a life. Does anyone have the Majjhima Nikaya here? You had the Majjhima Nikaya. Okay. I don't think there is very much to add to what I said, but I can give you some idea if I can borrow the Majjhima Nikaya. That would be wonderful. And everyone is making a bit of merit. You're lending, I'm reading, so we're all working together. Thank you very much. Okay, so are you ready for the dog duty ascetic? This is Majjhima Nikaya 57. Oh, it's already underlined here. That's very nice. Okay. So here we go, right? So this is Punna, the dog duty ascetic, and the other one is called Senya, the naked dog duty ascetic. Actually, there is one fellow who is on Sutta Central. His name is Senya. I should tell him that his name is the same as the naked dog duty ascetic. Maybe he should change his name. I don't know. Anyway, so this is what they ask. Venerable Sir, they asked the Buddha, this Senya is a naked dog duty ascetic. What he does is hard to do. He eats his food when it is thrown to the ground. Ground, he has long taken up and practiced that dog duty ascetic. What will be his destination? What will be his future course? And the Buddha replies, enough, Puna, let that be. Do not ask me that. Right, because he realizes it's quite hard to hear the answer. And then, of course, he asks two more times, and then the Buddha replies, here, Puna, someone develops the dog duty fully and uninterruptedly. He develops the dog habit fully and uninterruptedly. He develops the dog mind fully and uninterruptedly. He develops the dog behavior fully and uninterruptedly. Having done so on the dissolution of the body after death, he reappears in the company of dogs. Yeah. But if he has such a view as this, by this virtue or observance or asceticism or holy life, I shall become a great god or some lesser god. That is wrong view in his case. Now there are two destinations for one with wrong view, either hell or the animal realm. So Puna, if his dog duty succeeds, it will lead him to the company of dogs. If it fails, it will lead him to hell. When this was said, Senya, the naked dog duty ascetics, cried out and burst into tears. Then the Blessed One told Puna, son of the Kalyans, the ox duty ascetic, Puna, I could not persuade you when I said, enough, Puna, let that be. Do not ask me that. And then it carries on a little bit like that. That's really all it says. It doesn't say that much, right? It just gives you a rough idea. And the suttas are often like that. They often give you just an outline of what is going on. And then they kind of leave it at that usually. Okay, so I hope you are satisfied with that. But really what you should do is go to the sutta yourself and read it, right? That is the ideal way of doing that. So Majjhima Nikaya 57 is the place to go. Okay, dear Ajahn, in the context of Dhamma and Vinaya, what is the Buddha's view on killing pests such as termites, fleas, tapeworms, etc.? Thank you. This is always problematic, right? These are the things that people are always worried about. So again, you try to minimize this as much as you can. You try to avoid it. You try not to come from desire. That is the problem with the garden, right? It's my garden. I have some attachment to it. I want to kill those pests, get them out of the way, so my garden can be beautiful. That is why that is not the ideal way of killing, because it really is a little bit too much desire there to have things your way. But if it is termites and you are forced to do it by the council or whatever, then it's a different kind of situation. If it is tapeworm, right, and these kind of pests, it is important to look after our bodies to some extent. We can't. I think that this is a legitimate way also to sometimes to eliminate these kind of things that are very destructive for our physical bodies. Sometimes I think we have no choice in those cases as well. So that, I think, is, to me anyway, that would be a legitimate reason, whereas some of the other ones are not. So try to find that balance, right? What kind of works and what doesn't work. Understand your mind. See if it comes from desire and attachment. See if it comes from a wholesome view, wholesome compassion for the situation or whatever it is. And then you're on the right track. And it's okay to make a little bit of mistake, right? We're never going to be 100% perfect in these things. You try your very best. And if you make small mistakes, it's not going to have a major effect on your karma. So you're still going to be okay in that situation. Okay, on the note of the dog duty ascetic, that really hit the note today, I can see. Yeah? The grey areas of dark and bright actions. What is Ajahn's take on a journalist, a Buddhist journalist, who writes half-truths or withhold the truths because he needs to listen to his big bosses or abide by the company's policies on matters which at times need to be covered up to the interest of the policy makers? Okay, so this is... This is one of the problems with life, right, is that often we are in these kind of binds, the situations where other people are demanding of us that we do immoral things sometimes. And of course, just because somebody else demands of you that you do something immoral doesn't really make it moral to do it just because somebody else is pushing you. If you are a soldier in the war and the government demands that you are a soldier, if you kill people, you still have to take some degree of moral responsibility in that kind of situation. There's a famous story from Thailand when they were almost at war in Thailand, and one of the monks in the monastery, Ajahn Chah's monastery, he was called up to go into the army, right? And then he went to Ajahn Chah and asked him, "What should I do? I've been asked to go into the army. I'm a monk." And Ajahn Chah, very surprising, he said, "You should go." Right? That's what he said. Take off your robes and come back as a monk later on. And then he said, "But what if I have to kill somebody?" And Ajahn Chah gave this very nice piece of advice that what you do is you shoot over their head, right? You aim over their head. It's quite nice, isn't it? So this means it's almost like it's a way you try you get out of the problem in a way. Nobody's going to know where you're aiming anyway, so it doesn't really matter, right? And then you're out of the problem. And this is kind of one of those nice little ways of getting out of that. But it doesn't get us out of the immorality fully, even though other people are demanding these things. So if you are a journalist who writes half-truths and withholds the truth sometimes, you're probably still making a little bit of bad karma by doing that, because you are part of the problem. Even though your bosses have to take a lot of the bad karma, you have to take a little bit as well. So it's not the ideal situation. In that kind of situation, maybe it's better to get a new boss, right? See if you can, or something like that, and then see if you can kind of improve that sort of what is going on there. Ideally, we find people in our life that are like-minded with us, who are good bosses, who have the same kind of values that we have. Otherwise, it's easy to fall into these kind of clashes in life. Okay. Dear Bhante, this morning we learned a sutta about tears, rebirth. There is another type of tear that I experience in meditation retreat. uncontrollably, no sadness, but the tears just continued to flow from the eyes. What kind of fear is that? Thank you. Okay, so no sadness, right? Just tears flowing uncontrollably from the eyes. It's very hard to know without knowing what is going on there. There's so many reasons for crying. There can be so many reasons for that. One of the reasons for crying, you can cry from joy. You find that joy is so powerful that your tears just come rolling down, right? And this can happen from being happy. You can be happy and tearful. So having tears is not necessarily a sign of anything bad. It could be the sign of something good. So I cannot say it is not necessarily a fear at all. And because it is not necessarily, if you don't feel any sadness, perhaps you even feel joy, it's a good thing. And you should be happy about that. It's perfectly okay. So I think I said the word fear, but actually it's the word tear that occurs here. So I was getting that wrongly. So, So it all depends. Like everything else in life, it's not the thing itself that is either bad or wrong. It is the relationship it has to other qualities. Same thing with tears, the same thing with our actions, the same thing with almost anything. People have all kinds of strange experience in meditation practice, and they often ask questions like, I feel all these strange things happening. I see all these strange visions and all of this kind of stuff. But none of that is really significant, right? People want to know, what is the significance of this? But actually, you cannot really tell the significance of those things merely from the fact that you have a vision or something. What you feel is what matters. And that is why the Buddha is always concentrating on the feeling of meditation when he explains the path of meditation. Are you feeling peaceful? Are you feeling joyful? Are you feeling clarity? Are you feeling calm? These are the crucial marks that shows you whether meditation is going well or not. Not whether you're seeing some strange vision, not if you're feeling weird stuff, that is kind of irrelevant. And if your mind is in a good space, you're feeling relaxed, at ease, even joyful, these things, then you don't have to worry about all these strange perceptions happening. There's no problem with those perceptions at all. Just leave them to one side and keep on with your meditation practice. But if you are feeling kind of weird, kind of deluded, maybe a bit angry, and things are not going in the right way, and perhaps even getting worse, and you have these kind of visions, then it's probably a good time to stop the meditation, get up and do something else, and try again later on. So many things in life, we have to look at them from the right angle, the right point of view. And as long as the good qualities are improving, the bad qualities are going down, you are okay. So tears, not bad or good in themselves, it is the why of the tears that is important. How, what is the connection and the context of those tears? That is the important thing here. Dear Ajahn, on the subject of killing, you mentioned there are grey areas in a situation where there is a rodent in your house, despite using many methods to trap the animal. It has not been successful, including removing food, sending metta. It is still around. It looks like the only way to remove it is by using poison. What is your advice? Thank you. We in our monastery in Perth, we have all these traps for rodents, right? Traps that are live traps that walks inside and they can't get out again afterwards. And then we take it away and let the mice and the rats and things out in the forest. And that is usually a very successful strategy. So try to get some of those traps that catch them alive, right? And then kind of release them, not maybe in the neighbor's house, but a bit further away, right? So you don't kind of pass the problem on to somebody else otherwise. And in the forest is not a bad idea. Yeah, somewhere other. put some nice food in there, right? Some really yummy mouse food. And then the mouse is really happy, and then the mice will jump into this trap, and then the mice won't understand what happened. You take it away, and you are. That would be my recommended solution. We have had a lot of success with using these kind of traps in the monastery. They always seem to work. So if you haven't tried that yet, then check it out. And if you want to do a kind of a tour and to look at the traps, you're welcome to come down to Perth and check them out. Come on a meditation retreat and then look at the traps at the same time, right? Double purpose. Chopping two carrots with one knife. Not killing two birds with one stone. That's not a very Buddhist way. So that is, come on a fact-finding mission to Perth, and then you see how things go. Okay, I'm going to have a bit of coffee again, so please excuse me. I'm really appreciating your coffee, Jerry. It's really... In Thailand, they have, when you have a good upatak, you know what they call the good upatak? Supatak. That's what they call them. So either you're supatak, or maybe even super dupatak. That's even better here. Even higher. Okay, so next one. Good evening, Bhante. For Buddhist musicians and poets who continue to write songs and perform to the Buddhist public, and taking Anguttara Nikaya 579, Future Perils, in consideration, what is the motivation, intention of these musicians and poets so as not to create the corruption in the Dhamma? Is the motivation, I am the finger that points to the moon. I am only the agent. Please look to the suttas. Of course, this really depends on what, you cannot really tell people's motivations just like that. You have to look into their minds to really know what is going on. So I would say that if the musician is somebody who is a Buddhist and you have the choice between making stupid songs and making songs with a certain meaning, it's much better to make a meaningful song, right? Which has some kind of positive message at the very least. So if you are a musician already, when you're kind of heading in that direction, certainly I would say it is much better to do it that way. And if you are very wise, then you kind of include in your song, right? But read the suttas, la 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 la, read the suttas. So actually, you can actually hear that when he sings the song here. So that is the ideal way. So you're quite right. To kind of point them towards the suttas is really ideally the best way to do things in this particular context. But there are always going to be musicians, always going to be poets around. Some of the very famous poets in the early days was a poet in India called Ashvaghosa. And Ashvaghosa, I think he lived around the 3rd century, and he made this long poem about the life of the Buddha. Very, very famous poem, and it's well known to the present day, considered one of the masterpieces of poetry in ancient India. But again, it's just poetry, right? So this is always part of human life. We need a certain amount of entertainment, we need a certain amount of fun. So if you can do it in a good way, of course, that is better. But it's really for us as well as practitioners not to be carried away by those things, because we know that these things are going to happen, these things are going to be there, so we have to make the right choices in what Dhamma we follow. That is, I think, more important than asking the performers to do the right thing, because that, I think, is an impossible task in many ways. Okay. Dear Bhante, is investing in the share market a daylight robbery? Please help elaborate. Thank you. I don't think so. I think the share market is really just a way for companies to be able to raise money. That's the whole purpose of having a share market. Of course, it depends how you use the share market. If you have do all kind of insider trading and you have special information that nobody else has, then yes, it is daylight robbery. In that case, you are definitely doing something immoral, because you are taking the money that really should belong to somebody else, right? Somebody else is losing out, you are winning because you are using information that is not available to everyone else. But if you just invest in something, in a company that you believe in, maybe whatever it is, you're just part of the structure of society that makes kind of the wheels turn around. I don't think that is a big deal, and I don't think that is a problem at all. So you just have to, I don't think that is an issue at all, actually, in that particular case. The society is structured in this way. Society runs on this basis. And if you are part of that, I think that is perfectly fine. Okay. One day in the near future, artificial intelligence may develop to the complexity and level of intelligence comparable to humans, making them hard to tell apart from humans. At which level do the actions of artificial intelligent robots is subject to the laws of karma? Can there be a possibility to be reborn as one of these robots in the artificial brain, mimics the biological brain to be as complicated and almost the same structure? Okay, so at what point do the robots start making karma? I actually gave a talk on this quite recently down at the Maloka Center in Perth. I talked about artificial intelligence and robots and these kind of things. And one of the important points is that to understand is that karma is only made when you have an intention. Intention means you have an aim. It means you have a purpose in life. You want to go somewhere. Right? Now, to be able to have a purpose, to be able to have an aim, you need to have values. You have to have certain things that you value more than others. Right? If you have something, I value this, then that will be my aim. If I value B instead, I will move towards B. There have to be certain things you value more than others. You have to be able, otherwise you can't make any decision. If everything has the same value to you, you can have no aim and no purpose. Because things, you need values to be able to move towards something. Where do values come from? Values come from feelings. We want good feelings in life. We don't want the bad ones. We want to be as happy as possible. We want to reduce suffering as much as possible. So it is the fact that we feel that gives us values. Because we feel and we have values, that is why we have aims and purposes. That's where intention comes from. If you have no feelings, it is impossible to have intentions because the whole value system falls apart. This is what Vedana Paccaya Tanha is about, independent origination, right? You have feelings and then you act according to that, depending on craving, and intention is also part of that in there somewhere. If feelings is required, now feelings can only exist together with consciousness. To be able to feel anything at all, to be able to experience a feeling, you have to be conscious of it, right? If you're not aware of the feeling, if you don't have a conscious experience, you're not actually feeling anything at all. So the question that you're asking here, can a robot become conscious? That is really the question that you're asking. Because without consciousness, there can be no feeling, there can be no intention, there can be no purpose, there can be no aim for these kind of things. So that is the deeper question. Can robots ever become conscious? And I say the answer to that is probably no. I don't think they can be conscious, except, right? And this is kind of the thing that you are kind of getting at towards the end here, except maybe if you get reborn into a robot body, then of course, yes, then the robot becomes conscious in a sense. But remember, if you get reborn into a robot body, then that robot becomes just another being just like us, Right? That robber will say, oh no, too much suffering, too much dukkha, too much relationship problems, right? All of these kind of things. So the robot would be just another being, just like us. It may look big and ugly and strong, all of these kind of things, but inside it will have a tender heart, just like everyone else. And this is kind of the funny thing about this. So, I would say that conceivably, just possibly, it might be possible to be reborn into a robot body. But you have to have the right kind of karma, right? Because that body will be able to give you certain kind of happinesses and pleasures, certain kind of suffering, depending on how it's all connected up and these kind of things. So if you have the karma to be reborn into a robot body, then maybe that will happen. Yeah, and you have to want to be reborn in a robot. I know that there are, I think it would be completely madness to be want to be reborn as a robot, but I'm sure there are such people out there. There are people who are really kind of experimental and who like to do crazy stuff in this world. So I'm sure that you can find that kind of people out there. Anyone here who would like to be reborn as a robot? Would that be cool, or would it be kind of scary? Anyway, so that is my answer. I think the likelihood of being reborn as a robot is very low, because I think normally you would not be able to experience happiness and pain in the same way we're experiencing them as humans. And of course, the whole idea of karma is driven by what kind of happiness and pain we will experience as a consequence of our karma. So I think that there is a natural limitation there in many ways. Okay. Question: does omission fall into the category of dark and bright action? So, Bhante, what karma does a person create by omission of action or speech? i.e., withholding the truth, keeping silent, not giving of alms to a street beggar. Okay, so it depends on the situation again. It depends why you are doing these things. Remember, it always comes back to your motivation. Why are you doing this? And if you are withholding the truth and your motivation is to deceive, your motivation is not to allow other people to know what is going on, you want to because you are greedy for something, or you are angry about something or something like that, then of course, yes, it is bad karma, because you're coming from the wrong place. Your motivation is wrong. But again, if you are withholding the truth out of compassion because it is the wrong time to say it and all of these kind of things, then again, it is not necessarily bad karma, maybe even good karma under the right circumstances. So again, we need to get a little bit away from this idea of asking the question, is a certain action bad or good? It is where you are coming from that makes the action bad or good, not the action or lack of action in itself. Not giving alms on the street to the street beggar, is that good or bad? Again, it depends why you're doing it. If you're angry with the street beggar, this bad street beggar, no way I'm going to give anything to you, right? And then you kind of walk past him and you're kind of really upset with the street beggar, then of course, not so good. But if you are kind of just walking to work and you haven't got time, or you feel that it is the wrong day, or you know something bad about this beggar, you don't feel like giving, you know, there's so many reasons why you may not give to a street beggar. So again, look inside of yourself. Why are you not doing it? That is what really matters in these cases. And then you will know whether it's good or bad. Okay, last question for tonight. Is watching public shared YouTube videos about movies and series considered stealing? I think this all depends on what does it feel like to you? Does it feel like you're stealing when you do that? You have to look inside of yourself, and sometimes you have to know whether these things, I don't think doesn't sound like stealing to me. It is publicly available, it is out there already. really, I suppose it is the job of YouTube and the companies, like Google or whatever, who owns these companies, to make sure that they don't put up anything wrong. And somebody should perhaps complain and say, they have put up my video, it's not really appropriate. For the person who puts it up, though, if they are breaking copyright, that, of course, is where the problem really arises. But if you have doubt and you think that this is a serious breach of copyright and it is a movie that hasn't been released yet and somebody is already putting it on YouTube, right, that kind of stuff, then maybe it is a little bit dodgy. But I think it is, I don't know, I don't think it is a very serious issue in those cases. I think it's kind of a borderline thing, but maybe not ideal, but not, I think, a very serious thing here. Some old movies are uploaded to YouTube. While it is possible to search very hard to find the DVD somewhere or pay some online video service for it, generally the movie has little to no earning power anymore. Okay, so is that good or bad? Okay, if watching movies like this is considered stealing, then what about music? Most music is available on YouTube, yet also sold as albums. I think many of these things are very depends on the laws in the country and all of these kind of things. Laws will vary a lot. In some countries, they have very strict laws about this kind of stuff, and it might, from a legal point of view, be considered stealing, right? And if it is considered stealing from a legal point of view, then it is quite likely that you will feel a little bit bad by downloading those things and listening to them. If it is not considered stealing from a legal point of view, then I would say you can go by the laws of the land and say, okay, the law of the land says it's okay, then probably it is okay. So sometimes we need to go by the social conventions that exist in a particular society. It is like the third precept of Kamesu Micharchara, which is about sexual things, right? What is a sexual inappropriate conduct will vary from society to society. In some, these things are slightly different depending on what kind of society you're living in. And the same thing I would say with downloading movies and music, it depends on the conventions of that land. And if it is the convention is that it is stealing, then I think you will also feel worse about it as a consequence. One possible difference is that the music was uploaded by the music producers, whereas movie producers do not wish their movies to be available for free generally. Yeah, okay, in that case, no problem, right? There are also people selling one-time fee, a box which streams shows online without giving money to the show producers. It would not be easy for most people to distinguish the legality of the shows. Sometimes, even if we wish to pay for the show, there is no easy way to obtain it from the legal paying video sites. Sometimes, you know, we do our best to do what is right in this world, and sometimes maybe it is difficult, so you just have to feel your way through these things. What feels right? What feels dodgy? And if something feels dodgy, that is when you have to be very careful. Because if it feels bad, it will have bad karmic effect. If it doesn't really feel very bad, and it feels, well, I don't really know of any other way of doing this, then, of course, you don't have to be so worried about it. So this is one way to check these things out. Just go with how it feels for you. But, of course, be careful, because sometimes our feelings are not entirely reliable. Sometimes greed says, yeah, this feels good, right? This feels really nice. So you have to be careful in that area and not fool yourself, because sometimes the defilements will be more powerful than you are, and they will convince you that it's okay, when in fact it may not be okay at all. Okay, so there you are. That is all for tonight. So, okay, so for all of you who are going back, you're finished with your retreat. Goodbye. And maybe we'll see you again some other time, maybe next year or whatever, see what happens next time. Otherwise, it's been very nice to have you here. Let's pay respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha before we go.